Bhagavatam, Canto 6, 17th chapter, Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. This morning we're studying text number 21. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one. Unaffected by the conditions of the material world, He creates all the conditioned souls by His own personal potency. Because of being contaminated by the material energy, the living entity is put into ignorance and thus into different conditions of bondage. Sometimes, by knowledge, the living entity is given liberation. In Sattva-gun and Raja-gun, he is subjected to happiness and distress. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The question may be raised, why the living entities are situated in different conditions and who has arranged this? The answer is that it has been done by the Supreme Personality of Godhead without anyone's help. The Lord has His own energies, parasya shaktiya vividaiva sruyate, and one of them, namely the external energy, creates the material world and the varieties of happiness and distress for the conditioned souls, under the supervision of the Lord. The material world consists of three modes of material nature, sattva-guna, raja-guna, and tamoguna. By sattva-guna, the Lord maintains the material world. By raja-guna, He creates it. And by tamoguna, He annihilates it. After the varieties of living entities are created, they are subject to happiness and distress according to their association. When they are in sattva-guna, the mode of goodness, they feel happiness, and when in raja-guna, they are distressed, and when in tamoguna, they have no sense of what to do or what is right and wrong. In translation again, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, unaffected by the conditions of the material world. He creates all the conditioned souls by His own personal potency. Because of being contaminated by the material energy, the living entity is put into ignorance and thus into different conditions of bondage. Sometimes, by knowledge, the living entity is given liberation. In sattva-gun and raja-gun, he is subjected to happiness and distress. So, here, Chitraketu Maharaj is surveying the condition of the material nature. He's continuing in this description. This is giving us categories by which we need to understand the world and how it works. There are many, many, many philosophers, and they all try to put things into categories to try to understand what's going on here. Early Greek philosophical speculators tried to understand what was the basis of everything. Somebody said everything is air, and somebody else said everything is water, and somebody else said everything is fire, and somebody else said everything is flux, and somebody else said everything is the one, and so on. And they try to understand. Now modern science has their categories. We're supposed to understand everything. There are electrons, protons, neutrons. The elements begin with hydrogen and work their way up. You add neutrons and electrons, and add protons, electrons, neutrons, and so on. You get the periodic table of the elements. Aristotle had his categories, potency and act, and so on. There are different categories. But here, these categories are given to us by Krishna. Therefore, the best categories. Three modes of material nature. So we can see how to apply them, and we should apply them. This is how we should see this world. The other categories that other philosophers have, they have some truth to them, otherwise they wouldn't work. Somehow or other, not truth, but usefulness. They're useful for certain purposes. Truth is another thing. You know, sometimes the only way you judge truth is by usefulness anyway. Well, if it works, it's true. We know they're atoms because we can blow up atomic bombs. Although no one's seen an atom. No one ever will see an atom. In principle, it can't be seen. Not really. But everybody believes in them because using that kind of theoretical construct, they're able to do certain impressive things. So this teaching of the three modes of material nature is maybe one of the another part of the Bhagavad Gita that is very little understood, even though it's not in some ways a very transcendental subject matter. And maybe from obscure commentaries, the obscuring commentaries of the Mayavadis, people who read Bhagavad Gita don't understand that Krishna is a person. But when I used to read Bhagavad Gita before I was a devotee, and this was in college classes with instructors, nobody ever explained what this business was of the three modes, which are usually translated as strands, the three strands. Now, what are these strands, you know? I never really understood what it was talking about until I got Prabhupada's books. And, oh, this is what this is about. So the three modes of material nature, the word guna, it means rope also, a quality. It can also mean rope. And it's compared to a rope made of three strands. They're woven together. But the three qualities. But it's simple, as it explained here. Look around you, and you see things are being created. Are they not? Things are coming into being. Things are maintained, and things are being destroyed. This is a very basic cycle of nature: creation, maintenance, and destruction. Creation, maintenance, and destruction. And out of the destruction of some living entities, the parts are scavenged and used in new creations, and then there it goes. So it cycles and recycles: creation, maintenance, and destruction, creation, maintenance, destruction. So that we also see, it's a simple thing. When things are being created, when nature is acting in a certain way that things are being created, we say nature is acting in the mode of passion. When nature is acting in such a way that things are being maintained, we say it's acting in the mode of goodness. And when nature is acting in the way that things are being destroyed or taken apart or decaying or rotting, we say it is in the mode of ignorance. Simple, right? Very basic pattern: creation, maintenance, destruction. These are the three modes of material nature. And when a soul takes on a material body and becomes conditioned, Condition means the way he is depends upon other things. He's conditioned specifically by these modes of material nature, which work starts to act in complicated ways, various kinds of combinations and permutations. So it becomes conditioned by the modes. Now, the next thing we have to understand is these modes of nature also affect human psychology. The act of creation for a human being is the sex act. How one feels when one is sexually agitated, that's the mode of passion. There it is. That's what the mode of passion is like. Jumps around, hops around, can't sit still, runs here, runs there, does this, does that. That's what the mode of passion is like. And what's the mode of goodness like? When things are being maintained, one is calm, peaceful, pensive, reflective. That's the mode of goodness. And what's the mode of ignorance? You don't care about anything. You're not active like the mode of passion, and you're not thinking or reflective like you are in the mode of goodness. Mode of ignorance is you lay on your couch in front of your TV, you watch whatever's on, and you don't even have the energy to get up and change the channel. This is the mode of ignorance. Everybody knows this mode. Usually it's achieved by the help of intoxicants. But you're in the mode of ignorance. So these are the mode, they affect human psychology. The mind is either the mode of goodness, passion, or ignorance. And so that's been described by Krishna. So the human being acts in certain ways. And he can be dominated by one of these modes or another of these modes. So that's what's in here in this chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, which is an interesting chapter. Because Prabhupada says, if one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. Just by understanding through philosophical speculation. By understanding this knowledge given in this chapter, various great sages attain perfection and transfer to the spiritual world. One who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection, it says. These are various things. So philosophical speculation is pretty good here. Because you come to an understanding of devotional service. So it's how to attain spiritual qualities. So what this chapter will do is tell us how to recognize these modes as we are affected by them psychologically or existentially. Then, if we engage in the process of devotional service, we should see that psychologically there should be a change, that the mode of ignorance and passion will begin to go away. Because the great news for the whole Western world, because you see, people in the West, they don't understand the material world or how it works because they don't understand the modes of material nature. Why is it, philosophers wonder, thinkers wonder, all the time, that human history is so ghastly, that as long as anyone can remember, it's been a history of violence, of perpetual warfare. As long as there's been any recorded history, there's been one war after another. And one war leads to the next war. I mean, if you want to understand World War I, you have to go back to the 30 Years' War of the previous century. I mean, the revolutions of the previous century, and then you have to go back to the 30 Years' War, and then you have to go, you know, one after another. World War I led to World War II, and so on, all the time. Everybody hates these wars. Nobody, there's so much suffering, and yet, you know, as soon as the call to arms is there, people get excited, they get enlivened. You know, they get happy. Life has a meaning. And then they're disillusioned all over again. Doesn't think, why is it? This history keeps moving on. And despite all the plans for peace, you won't go anybody, see anybody who wants war. Everybody wants peace. Nobody's into it. And yet it happens over and over and over and over and over again. Why is that? It's obviously not under human control. It's because nature is, because everyone is being controlled by the modes of material nature. And they have to act in a certain way. And they have to take the results of their past good and evil deeds. That's all. People don't understand this, so they can't understand what is this world and why is it working the way it is, but one can see. So one becomes conditioned by this mode when it comes into contact with material nature, and Krishna goes through this chapter. He tells us everything about it. Then what we have to understand is that knowledge depends on goodness. If actually one wants to understand things philosophically and to see things as they are, one at least has to be in the mode of goodness. The position of devotional service is transcendental to the mode of goodness. The condition of spiritual existence, or the spiritual world, is called Vishuddha Sattva. Sattva means goodness, but Vishuddha means pure goodness, purified goodness. Why is this spiritual existence called goodness? Why isn't it just without any? Sometimes it's called nirguna, as in nirguna Brahman. Spiritual life is called nirguna, but now we give it the name of a quality, Shuddha Sattva or Vishuddha Sattva. Well, because this the condition in the spiritual existence is one of existence without any limit. There's no coming into being in the spiritual world. Therefore, there is no mode of passion. There is no going out of being or destruction in the spiritual world. Therefore, there is no ignorance. But things are eternally maintained. Therefore, it's goodness. For with not one single tinge of passion and ignorance. So it's called Vishuddha Sattva. And that sattva of the spiritual world dribbles or leaks into the material world, so to speak, and becomes the material mode of goodness. But when it's wound around with passion and ignorance. And that's why the guna avatar in charge of goodness is Vishnu himself, because that's his mode of existence, whereas Brahma and Shiva are in charge of passion and ignorance. So, when what happens or should happen in the progressive development of devotional service, if that is, one has by nature been situated to some whatever extent under the influence of the mold of passion and ignorance, that should go away. That is the experience of devotional service, is that lust, which is the mode of passion, greed, which is the mode of passion, anger, which is the mode of ignorance, all of these things should be disappearing from the heart. And one first of all becomes situated in the mode of goodness. This ability of devotional service to be able to take people out of the mode of ignorance and put them into the mode of goodness is the basis of our claim that people, by performing devotional service, no matter where they come from, can become qualified brahmanas. That's the basis of that claim. And that's why Prabhupada said, I have taken hippies and made them into happies. He meant that he had taken people who were in the mode of ignorance and brought them to the mode of goodness. From Prabhupada's point of view, hippies were in the mode of ignorance. Why? They had the characteristic signs. They were dirty. They had no money. They were intoxicated. They were frequently insane. Always bewildered and had no idea what to do. These were characteristics of the mode of ignorance. When I began studying Bhagavad Gita, I realized, remember in the 60s, there was something called the generation gap between the generation of the 60s and their parents. And I realized it was the conflict between those in the mode of passion and those in the mode of ignorance. Mode of passion: get a job, do something with yourself. Mode of ignorance: what's the use, what's the purpose? So you start to see this is what we said, we should have shastra chakshusha. We should see through the eyes of scripture. So one should undertake these categories Krishna has given us: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Study the symptoms here, what they are. The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and hankerings. I want this, I want that, I gotta have this, I gotta have that. More of this, more of that. Who's gonna build the next biggest skyscraper? Look at Manhattan, sitting smoking in the morning, That's passion. It's not goodness, and it's not ignorance. If there were ignorance, there would still be, nothing would be happening. The Bronx is the mode of ignorance. Manhattan is still the mode of passion. And of course, what we see is, as the world progresses, is that passion and ignorance are becoming more and more and more. There's a common saying, a truism: they don't make things to last anymore. They don't make things like they used to make them. This is the nature of the modern world. Things are made to be temporary. So everything is being cars, hundreds of cars are being, millions of cars are being manufactured every year. They're expected to last 2 or 3 years, and then they're destroyed. So that's all passion. Manufacture like crazy, and you destroy like crazy. Who expects a car to run 25, 30, 40 years? Everybody knows you could build an automobile that would last 50 years. That's no problem. How to do that? But because of the conditions of life, passion and ignorance, they're not built to last. Oh, that would slow the economy down. Well, in the mode of goodness, you would like to see the economy slowed down. You could understand, for example, if the automobile industry became Krishna conscious, say somehow or other through some miracle, the devotees of Krishna consciousness actually begin to control the marketplace. And devotees sat down. These are presumably people under the influence of the mode of goodness. And so you have to manufacture. We would still have automobiles. I mean, the ox cart crowd, but still the world is what it is. And you can't sit around and turn everything backwards. So let's say we're still going to have automobiles. So what kind of automobiles do you make? Well, you have a sedan, and of course you have a van, and maybe you have a truck. A few things. So you build them, and they last. You build them so they last 50, 60 years. Same parts. Like Henry Ford started out, you got your choice of colors, black or black or black. Because he only made them black. It wasn't Chevrolet or somebody started making different colors. Why bother to make so many colors? One color, one style van, one's whatever you basically need, and then you just keep on making it. And the only time you change it, if you're actually going to improve something. And there you go. You only need a few factories, and that's it. This is what it would be like. But right now, similarly, you make furniture, you make it so it lasts. And right now, you got cardboard with wood veneer over it, and so on. Everything falls apart. So the symptoms of passion and ignorance, they grow more and more. And Prabhupada said, today civilization is becoming more advanced in the mode of passion. And also now, the mode of ignorance more and more is prevailing. So these symptoms are not advancement. Advancement in the mode of passion is not at all advancement. So the standard of advancement of civilization is the standard of the mode of goodness. But you don't see, you go to the places where Lisa's supposed to be in the mode of material goodness, like the universities, you see they've come completely gone over. And in universities, there's so many big, you know, because of the advancement of the mode of ignorance, the same bewilderment is there anymore. Nobody can even say what is good or what is bad. It used to be that you would get a book, you know, in a literature course, and say Bleak House by Charles Dickens, and it would mean something. You would read it and it would have a meaning, and you'd try to find out what the meaning was. It was a common agreed on meaning. It is actually literary theory being taught today in universities that it's silly to look for a meaning. That the meaning is somewhere in the interaction between the words and the author brings to it his own standards and expectations, and there isn't, and it's, you talk about the meaning of the text is crazy. So people just can do with it whatever they want. This is a symptom of the mode of ignorance. Speculators now, that there's just no grounding, there's not even a document that somebody produced that's supposed to be an act of communication. You see, now there's not even any communication. It all begins to break down. Instead, you look at these texts, you mostly look for, you know, political meanings into stuff like that. Class prejudices, chauvinism, male chauvinism, whatever your particular thing you're looking for, you find in there. So this is more and more advanced in this way, mode of ignorance. So when Prabhupada came here, that was his idea. Was that people would become elevated to the mode of goodness through the practice of devotional service. And that should be the symptom that these passions, and then when motive, at least the mode of goodness begins to develop, then we can begin to understand what is this material world, what is God, what is our position in it. There's no such understanding in the mode of passion. If you're in the mode of passion, you don't read books anyway. You don't really care. And you got too many deadlines, too many orders, you got too many things to do, you have so many plans, you got to keep running. This is the mode of passion. And in the mode of ignorance, of course, as I said, you can't bother to get up to switch the TV channel, so you're not concerned. So these things don't happen. So the mode of goodness, he says, here it is. Modern civilization is considered to be advanced in the standard of the mode of passion. Formerly, the advanced condition was considered to be in the mode of goodness. So all the old-fashioned values, these are all standards of the mode of goodness. So goodness is reflective, it's pensive. Passion is restless and active, and ignorance is inert. But even those in the mode of goodness have to go further. Mode of goodness also conditions one to go into the higher planets, to a sense of pleasantness, because one in the mode of goodness is happy. His material conditions are usually fairly nice. See, misery comes from the mode of passion. The mode of passion is always miserable, because Mick Jagger noticed you can't always get what you want. The truth of it is, if you're really in the mode of passion, you never get what you want. Because what you want is always more than what you have, whatever you happen to have. That's the nature of the mode of passion. The nature of the mode of passion is you want the most beautiful woman in the world. So you may have, so-and-so, But you can't be sure that the next one that you'll see will be more beautiful. So you're always on the alert. So there's no end to these desires and longings. So one is always in a tortured state. And then things are always falling through. They're not working out right. They're always difficult. Because a person in the mode of passion is always trying to get more than he's earned or deserves. He's always in anxiety. So there's misery all the time. Whatever he gets, he can't enjoy either. Prabhupada talked about this. You have to work so hard to get your things, but there's never any chance. You may have a big house, but you're never in it. You may have a family, but you never see them. So these are the difficulties. You never really enjoy it. It's always just being driven on and on and on and on for more and more and more and more and more. And you can never satisfy your desire. So that's the problem. Ignorance is also increasing. Therefore, we see also the symptom, the result of ignorance is insanity. So insanity is more and more common as time goes on. It becomes just part of the normal course of life. That most of the people you deal with, and many of the people you deal with, are crazy. And people don't even notice anymore sometimes. It's just the eccentric. If someone's dark raving mad, it's not dangerous. Then we ignore it. So this is the business of Krishna consciousness, is to reverse this trend, to actually reestablish the standard of the mode of goodness. All this stuff People are pushing the whole standard of material advancements to take us more and more into passion and eventually more and more into ignorance. And if you notice the things that, as things develop, as the values that are being pushed, you'll see they're all in the mold of passion and they should be rejected. Then we can actually become situated in the material mold of goodness, and then by getting absorbed in devotional service in the mold of goodness, then all tinge of passion and ignorance will disappear, and one becomes situated in the transcendental position, as it says in this chapter, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. He comes to the platform of Brahman. Any questions? Yeah.
I've had a question about the modes for a long time, and it's a little hard for me to even articulate what it is, but as far as I understand in the Sankhya philosophy, the ontology, I don't recall that the modes of material nature are listed. In other words, it's divided up in another way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if the modes are actually in themselves things or energies, or whether they're an abstract higher order categorization of, for example, the way consciousness interacts with matter.
So far as I understand it, it's a state. It's a state and a matter. If you look and you see how in the third canto, the second canto, they describe the universe, there's the Mahatattva, then the Mahatattva goes into the mode of goodness, and it produces this, it goes in the mode of passion, it goes in the mode of goodness, it produces mind and the senses, it goes in the mode of passion, it produces the senses, and the intelligence, it goes in the mode of ignorance, it produces the sense objects. So far as I understand, it's a way things act. It's a way of acting. In other words, it's patterns of relationships. There's not a separate thing called a mode. It's a mode of nature. And it's always been my understanding. Okay? If you can think of something to look different. But, Mani Manjari?
I have a question. Scientists and philosophers, they're always researching for the truth by dint of their own knowledge. But I wonder why we have to find all the research when everything is already there, when Krishna says, it's like this, and it's like this, and that's the truth. So what is the difference? Why do we have to research for the truth when, if they read books, and Krishna says, this is the truth, and it's like this? So what makes them make a difference? If they are looking for the truth.
Yeah, but why should they accept Krishna's word for it? They don't believe in Krishna, for example. Or they do believe in Krishna, but Krishna hasn't told us everything. You look through the whole of what Krishna has revealed, and there's no recipe for birth control pills, for example. We want birth control pills. And nowhere Krishna has told us how to do that. We want facility for things. Activities that are not sanctioned by Krishna. So our restless minds must try to understand material nature so we can get things that we want. So the mode of passion, the unlimited desires and longings, many times those desires and longings are for illicit things. Therefore, trying to enjoy the material world and not use it in Krishna's service. Therefore, you have to develop your own science. Not the science of self-realization, but the science of enjoying your own way.
And transcendental?
Yeah, but they don't speculate. Mayavadis, if they're strict Mayavadis, their speculation is all how to get out of this material world. They follow the authority of the Vedas. They just accept one portion of it, the Gyanakanda portion, as more important. But their method is completely intellectual and speculative. Omar?
I was just thinking also another point. The first question was that they want to be the ones who discover the truth. Because if they accept it from Krishna, then that means they're second best.
That's another good point. The point of pride.
Yeah, I have one friend, he's an existentialist, he's been studying his master's degree in philosophy. And he was telling me about Sartre and his philosophy about, you know, phenomenology and how he's criticizing Kant and this and that, and how you can only know what's within your own, you know, given to you by your senses and your mind. And I said, well, that's in the Bhagavad Gita. And I showed him the chapter where Krishna's talking about the field, the knower of the field and all these things. And his face fell apart and he said, no, that can't be. It's all just a matter of interpretation. They study Western philosophy. And then Prabhupada went back and he changed everything and interpreted so that it would be more right. Because he just couldn't accept Krishna's
name. Yes.
What is that your monk nature? Your previous activities?
Yeah, your previous activities.
So you always enjoy your life and have a tendency for such a kind of moral nature?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Taka.
On the inquiry, you're researching, in the nutshell verses, Krishna says, Tatisat Sarvatra Sarvada, that one should always inquire. And also, in another place, he says that to understand the absolute truth, there's four processes, and one of them is listed as Anumana.
I don't think anyone said anything about anything's wrong with inquiry. Yeah, Anumana means.
As a devotee, we should be inquiring.
Yeah, that's true. But our research is to understand Krishna better. Mani Manjari started out by saying when people don't take Krishna as a guide, as the goal, and it's just, let's just launch into the sea of speculation without following any, without taking any teacher, really, is what it comes down to. You might have to call it blind research. Let's go dig a hole and see what we can discover from this hole or that hole, the other hole. So that's different. That research is not God. Just like Krishna says, here's the Prabhupada said that to scientists, here's Srimad Bhagavatam, now use this for your research. So that researching capacity should go on, but it has to be done under the guidance of superior intelligence. If that superior intelligence is ignored, then it all comes to a bad end. I think that's the difference. But the inquisitiveness to know, the original inquisitiveness to know, the restlessness of human seeking and knowledge is all the desire to know Krishna. But if people start off with the proposition that as soon as we bring in God, we've broken the rules of our inquiry, then where are you? Which is what modern science does. The idea is to find out, is to understand and control the universe as much as you can without any reference to God. To figure out the premises, it has to have come about by itself without any divine intervention. As soon as you bring in divine intervention, you're not a scientist anymore. You can't do it. It's the ground rules of the research. God will not be discovered. It's guaranteed at the outset. Right? That's the problem. Because he said, you know, this idea, I want to be original. What does original mean? Adi Purusha. Somehow or other, I'm God. All knowledge flows from me. You know? The idea to control. I think you have to stop now. Closer to the problem.